Please welcome Russell.
Good evening. My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's good to be here. Nice, huh? How was Stevie B?
Great.
Y'all here for Stevie? He was excellent. What? He's a wonderful guy, and I love him a lot. And he has a real heart for people and a heart for this program. And I'm glad when I can't be here, I'm able to call on people like Stevie to step up to the plate and help out with things. I'm talking a little bit about a bunch of things, but I'll try to focus somewhere around the fourth step. And, you know, different people have different ways of doing these things. And I know when I was interested in doing the fourth step, I did the fourth step when I was about 18 months sober. And I stalled on it. I balked on it like everybody else does. And I don't know what everybody does, but I did. And but one of the things I used to do is I would go around to different meetings, to different step groups, I mean step meetings, step series, to listen to speakers talk about the four steps so I could figure out how to do it. Because it was so complicated. I mean, I had been to, I had graduated with a Bachelor's of Science, departmental honors in mathematics. I had was going for my PhD in algebraic topology. I was a National Science Foundation fellow. I had gone to law school. I had postdoctoral degrees. And I just couldn't figure out this fourth step thing. It was just way too complex. I just didn't get it. I didn't understand it. And by the way, when I finally got it, I needed to find the right person, you know? I needed to listen to Jesus or somebody from the podium who would explain to me how to do the four steps so that I could understand, because it made no sense to me. And, you know, that's important, because I ain't lying about that. And I want you to think about that for a second. Didn't matter how smart I was. Didn't matter how much money I was making. Didn't matter how far I'd gone in school. Didn't matter what my IQ was. And I'm not saying I was stupid, and I know you guys aren't stupid. It had nothing to do with it. I want you to understand that I knew a lot about everything. I knew everything, but that's all I knew. The only thing I didn't know is what the one thing was that would save me. I know everything about everything, except I didn't know how to save me. I was blank. I want you to imagine a situation where you know everything about everything, but the only thing that'll save you, you have no clue, even if it's in front of your face. You're like blinded. It's an amazing way to live your life. Amazing way to live your life. Think about it. Where you're successful in a whole bunch of different, you're like an idiot savant. You're successful in a lot of different areas, you know a lot of different things. But the one thing that will stop you from total destruction, whether it's a Britney Spears thing, losing your kids, you know, or some sort of suicidal where you're diving over it, whatever. The one thing that'll save you from dying on the planet Earth, you just can't see it. Doesn't matter how smart you are. For some reason, you just don't get it. And when I finally did the fourth step, by the way, when I finally did it, some guy said to me, and I was a guy who read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I read and I studied and all that stuff. When I finally did it, some guy that I had never met before at an AA meeting, where I was whining about how I was feeling and how I felt horrible and I knew I had to do my fourth step, one guy said this to me. This is what he said to me. With all the step meetings I went to and all the people I went to see, this is what he said to me. He said, well, why don't you go home tonight and sit down and pick up a pencil? Pick up a pencil. And I said, pick up. He says, just pick up a pencil and start. And I went home and I picked up his pencil and I opened the book. And you know what I saw when I opened the book? A chart. Did you guys know that there's a chart? I mean, I know you can write Hazleton and get charts. You can go on the internet and probably find right in fourth step. There's probably 10,000 fourth steps. Did you know in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there is a bloody chart with four lists? And you know how many times I had seen that chart in 18 months? 50, 100, 200 times I flipped through and seen that chart. I mean, it's a picture. You know, it's like looking through Playboy magazine. It's the centerfold. And I'm saying, how do you do the four step? How do you do it? I don't understand. How do you do this? And some guy said, pick up a pencil. And I went over and up the book, and there was a chart. And for the first time, I saw it. So how do you explain something like that? How do you explain something like that? And that's what I want to talk to you about tonight. I'm not even going to tell you how to do the four step. Because you want to know something? Those who are going to do it are going to do it. Because you know why I know that? Because if you have a desire to stop drinking, if you have a desire, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to anything to get it, then you're ready to take these steps and you'll be ready to take it. And if you don't want what we have, or you're not willing to go to any length, it ain't going to matter. You ain't going to do it no matter what I say. So I know the ones that are going to do it are going to do it. I don't have to tell you how to do it. You know why I don't have to tell you how to do it? Listen, you ready? Because there's a chart. And I just told you that there was a chart. So you have no excuse. It's not like 10 years from now you come to AA and say, I finally did the fourth step, I don't know why to do it. You know, some guy, if I remember correctly, he did tell me there was a chart. And if you want to do this thing, you'll see the chart. You'll go home and you'll pick up a pencil. And if you don't want to do it, you'll think of every reason why you don't understand what I'm talking about. Because chart will be just too complicated for you. It'll just be way too complicated. So I want to talk about something else, which to me has to do about the fourth step. It has to do with inventory. I always like to talk about the vision. You know, they say in the Bible, where there is no vision, the people perish. Because I believe that what's important to have a vision is to where this thing takes you. You know, a lot of meetings I go to, they read the promises. I don't know, why do they read the promises? Because it gives people a vision as to where this thing can take them and where it can go. So I want to tell you a little bit about the fourth step. Now, you can speak for hours. I know I can speak to hours on different things the fourth step can do. And one of the big things for me, which I may get into, but I probably won't get into that much right now, is what it does for you as far as your relationship with God. You know, I'm a God guy. You know, I'm going to talk about God. And somewhere in here, I'm going to bring up God. And there's no question about it that every one of these steps are designed for the primary deal. Because the primary deal is see to it that your relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And we suffer from a spiritual malady. And it's a spiritual disease. And from resentments and the problems that we have and selfishness, all sorts of spiritual diseases flow from that. And the drinking is just something we use because of our feelings of feeling restless, irritable, and discontent because of a spiritual malady. It's not because of a car deficiency or a romance deficiency or a sex deficiency or any of those deficiencies that we try to stuff into us in order to be better. It's because of a spiritual deficiency. And the only thing that fills that spiritual deficiency and gives us the power to make choices and be free and have that new freedom is that relationship with God, which is why they say in the big book, if a mere set of morals and a better philosophy of life would cure us, we'd be cured long ago. But it didn't help us because we had lack of power. That was our deliverer. That means we had to find the power by which we could live. And that's the reason why we wrote a book and we're going to talk about God. That's why they said, there is one who has all power. That one is God. They don't even say higher power. He says, that is God. May you find Him now. I think they're serious. They say throughout the book, and when you finally get to the 11th step, the whole point of the 11th step is now that you have this power, we try to improve this relationship. So there's no step in here which is not designed to help you to improve that relationship. And as the relationship improves, you change. And I transform into an incredible, remarkable things happen. It says if we sincerely try to take this position, all sorts of remarkable things happen. You know, I mean, I'm not talking about a car or a girl or a boy or a man. I'm talking about remarkable stuff. Being all powerful, He gives you everything you need if you stay close to Him and perform His work well. That's what it says in the big book. It says it all through the big book in different ways. I'm going to talk about it. That's what it says. And there's no question that the primary reason we take these steps all over the place, it says to be of maximum service to Him. It's not even to feel better. There are people that think that the reason you feeling better is a byproduct of performing the service for Him. Now, there are people that think that the whole purpose of this thing is to feel better. But that's no different than the way you were when you were sitting in bars. I'm going to have a drink to feel better. I'm going to get laid to feel better. You know, I'm going to make more money to feel better. If you come in here in order to feel better, and that's probably why we all come in here in the first place, ultimately, you're going to lose. Because ultimately what this thing about is this, there's a lot of people that come in here and they hit a meeting to feel better. And then they leave. And they hit a meeting to feel better. And then they leave. And they're not doing they. And when they feel better, they stop going to meetings because they don't need to, because they felt okay. Because what this thing is about is it's not about being selfless. It's not about maximum service to God. It's not about what they're talking about in this book. It's about them feeling better, which is just as selfish and still part of the disease, just as diseased and the main part of this disease. As you're not cured. You're actually suffering from the disease when that's it. But there are people that come in here that come to meetings where they feel good or whether they feel bad. They go out and do the service, and what their feelings are have absolutely nothing to do with it. It has to do with being grateful, being sober, and paying. You know, they ask Bill Wilson, what do you think of people that don't drink and go to meetings? Don't go to meetings. He says, I have no use for them because they have no gratitude. And it's a whole different mindset. There's two different mindsets going on here. There's the people who are here just to feel better, and there are people that are here to give back. And hopefully, even some people who are here to feel better will ultimately turn into the people that are here to give back, no matter how they feel. And so, one of the things I want to talk, and we know that we want to have that better relationship with God because more tremendous things will happen. As a matter of fact, it says in that same chapter, when we talked about chapter 3, it says, we will lose fear, we'll stop losing interest in our selfish things and our little plans, designs, we'll get interest in others. That's what the transformation, that's how you can tell when somebody's transformed. Because that's how you can tell. That's the fruit of sobriety. That's what real sobriety is. And a relationship with God, that's how it's evidenced. Because they don't talk about their plans and schemes. They don't come in here and whine and cry like, you know, thumbsuck and cry. You wouldn't believe what my mother did, my father did, my work. I can't believe this. They come here and they talk about helping other people. They look to help other people. They're not whining and crying. Not that you can't do that. Not that we all don't do that. But eventually they mature and they grow up and they start talking about other stuff. They talk about the solution. They're interested in helping people. It says we lose fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. We thought well before doing it, making sure that we are ready to turn our lives over to Him. You know, it's a whole different mindset. It's a whole different deal when you see what's going on here. And it says in the big book, it says when we have resentments, when we have these problems, when we have these things, what does it do? What's the real problem? It blocks out the sunshine of the Spirit. It blocks our relationship with God. It's not that we don't necessarily believe him or not. It deflects our relationship with God. That's what happened to Bill Wilson. He said, soon worldly clamors, mostly with myself, blocked me from him. And so that's what this is all about. And why do we want to have this relationship with God? I'll tell you why we want to have it. You ever hear the promises being read?
Yes.
You remember what, you know what they say? They said you're going to have a new freedom and a new happiness, right? How many people would like that? How would you like that? You don't even know what it is. Because it doesn't even say you're going to have the old freedom, the old life. It says it's going to be brand new. It's going to be unbelievable. You ever see the movie 2001 Space Odyssey? Anybody ever see that movie 2001 Space Odyssey? You know when the astronauts, the dead astronaut, whatever he was, dead, floating, he was around, he turns to the other astronaut and he says, something's going to happen. And the guy says, what? And he says, it's going to be wonderful. It's going to be wonderful. Something's going to happen to you. You know what it's going to be? It's going to be wonderful. It says we've experienced, you know the best they could do in the big book? They said, you're going to experience much of heaven and be rocketed in the fourth. They didn't say, it's going to be really horrible. It's going to be. They said, you're going to experience much of heaven and you will be rocketed. These are the into the fourth dimension of existence of which you would not. How many people want to sign on for that sucker? You know, that's the deal. That's what's going to happen. And you know what it says in the big book? He says, not only will we have a new freedom and a new happiness, no matter how far down we've gone, no matter what happened, we'll see where it can help others. Help others. Maximum service to God. We're going to see where it's a great, where everything that's happened to us, even the good, it's great, great stuff. You know what we're going to see? We're going to lose fear of people. You know what happens when you lose fear of people? You talk faster. You do. Because you're not worried about, I wonder what they think about me. Why did I say that? How can I, you know, I know you guys don't do that. I know you guys don't sit around every day, 15,000 times a day, why did I say that, what can I say that? I know you guys don't sit in class when they say anybody has an answer, and you have the answer, but you're scared to raise your hand, because what if you're wrong? You know, what if they laugh? And I know you don't worry about what other people think about you. I know you guys never say things like, I don't give a crap what they think about me. I know you don't think about what other people think about you, but just in case you're like me, that spent their whole life thinking about and worrying about what other people are thinking about them, what kind of a freedom is that to never have to worry about what anybody else ever thinks about you? Never have to have that on their mind. Never have to make that phone call. Never have to have that resentment. Never have to gossip about people or cut them down behind their back because you hate them so much or they make you feel so bad. Never have to be hurt that way. What's that worth to you? You're going to lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. What's it like, you know, not to have to worry about money? Not because you have money, just because you're just not worried about it. What's it like? How much would you pay for having that deal going on? How many times have you gone to an A room? How many times have you been driving around? How many times have you not been able to sleep at night? How many times have you woken up in the morning? How many times a day do you think about money? How many times a day do you think about bills? How many times a day do you think about your life and whether or not you're going to be able to survive or pay things or stuff like that? Does it make you feel good? Why don't you stop? Because you can't, right? Because you can't stop. And it just takes the spin off your fastball. And AA is great, but what do you do when you have real problems? What would you do to pay for not having to ever feel that way again? Or feel that way very rarely? I mean, that's why you drank, right? You drank for those feelings. When you drank, those feelings went away. They went away when you drank, until when you drank and they got worse. And then you had to stop, but then it was too late. What would you give to have that all go away? Wipe it out better than the booze and not have any hangover and feel good. What would you give for that? You know, it says you're going to lose fear of people and of economic insecurity. And you know what you're going to see? You're going to see how, you ready? How God is doing for you what you could not do for yourself. So the stuff they're talking about in the promises are not even stuff you can do. If you're sitting there trying to figure out, how do I make the promises? How can I get those promises? You ready? You can't. That's the point. You're powerless. You can't. If you could, you would have before you got here. You know why? Because you know what it says in the big book about God? You don't have to believe me. It's right in the book. It says, God is doing for you what you cannot do for yourself. Well, how is God going to do that for you if you don't have a relationship with him? That's what this relationship is all about. And so part of the fourth step and the fifth step and sixth step behind the whole thing, when it comes right down to it, it's all about bringing you closer to God. So he's going to do for you what you can't do for yourself. Get those things happening to you. And drinking is not even the problem. It's out of the question. All sorts of other stuff goes, it's out of the question, because you have a relationship with him, and that's the only thing that's important. That's the central part of your life, as they said in the big book. You know, that's the deal. We're going to talk about it here. And so I want to talk to you about one of the things that's going to happen to you with the four step, and that has to do with clarity. Or one of the terms that can be used as a biblical term is discernment. Being able to see things clearly. You know, I'm going to read you a couple things from the big book and different stuff about clarity and being able to see things. Let me read you this thing from, I might have read this before. This is called The Guy in the Glass. One of the words I use in here is something called PELF. PELF. That's not self, it's PELF. PELF is stuff. Is stuff. It's like things. How many people think about things? What would be material things? A car, money, a home, romance. Do you know in our big book, in our 12 and 12, it lumps romance into the same thing as car, as a material thing. Did you know that? Do you know we think about romance and romantic relationships like we think about cars? You go back to your house, it's Saturday night, you say, oh, if I only had a girl. If I only had a husband. If I only had it doesn't matter what he's like. Just give me a husband. What a crappy person I am. I don't have a husband. And then we marry some guy, and 6 months later we're saying, what the hell am I doing with this schlub? You know what I mean? Why did I buy this car? You know what I mean? It's just a thing. It's just a piece of meat, you know, I need a girl, I need a man, I need a this, I need a that. It's just something to add on. It's like a pocket, I need a Gucci bag, it's just a pocketbook, I need a haircut. It's just a thing to add on so that you'll be okay, because you know without that deal, you're nothing. You see, that was my problem, I was a nothing. I used to put something in my body, it made me an almost. When you're nothing, almost is top of the world. You know what I mean? So you guys, you go out and you get some gal and it makes you into an almost. You put that gal on your arm, some guys look at you and say, I'm an almost now, top of the world. And how long does that look? That's a temporary deal, isn't it? That doesn't work for a long time, does it? You know, I'm a divorce attorney, I know that deal. And it's all spiritual. Whenever they get divorced, it's all a spiritual deal. Everything, all the problems I see, it's all spiritually based. I mean, they're not going to listen to me. A lot of them, they're not going to listen to me, but that's where it's from. It's all about that craving for spiritual fellowship or something that's empty for another, maybe my fifth wife, you know? Multiple divorces, you know, my kid, everything is about adding things on to make me happy. Let me tell you something. If you're not happy without, you'll never be happy with. If you're not happy right now, if you're not feeling great about your life right now, there's nothing I could ever give you that would make you okay. I know you think $1 million would make you okay. You ought to sit around and wonder why all these movie stars that have all this money are going to go down the tubes, who are alcoholics and addicts. I guess $1 million doesn't help. If you're not feeling good about yourself and happy right now, no man, no woman, no thing will ever make you be okay. What it'll do is do the same thing booze will do. It'll make you okay for a nanosecond, for a few minutes, for a few hours, maybe for a week, and then it's down the tubes again. And then that won't be enough. You'll need another one. Because they'll never be good enough. They'll never be able to supply you with what you need because you're so needy. When you get what you want in your struggle for pelf and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say. For it isn't your father or mother or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back from the glass. He's the fellow to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end, and you've passed your most dangerous, difficult test if the guy in the glass is your friend. You may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. You can fool the whole world down the pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartache and tears if you've cheated the guy in the glass. In the glass. Don't tell me everything's okay when your thought life is about what a worthless piece of crap you are, or how you wish you were dead, or how you don't deserve to live. Don't tell me what a great person you are and to look at this thing and look at that thing when you're talking bad things about other people behind their back, or gossiping, or you feel compelled to say bad things about other people because you feel so crappy about yourself, and somehow, some way, when you talk crap about other people, it makes you feel good. Don't tell me what a wonderful person you are and how sober you are when that's your life. When that's your deal going on. When it's all about worry and remorse and guilt and envy. And envy. And envying other people and putting down other people because you're jealous or envious. Don't tell me how wonderful your sobriety is. Listen, I applaud you for being sober. You understand what I mean? Because that's important. Because if you're not sober, you ain't getting any of this stuff. But this is about more than sobriety. This is about emotional sobriety. Which Bill Wilson said, one of the things he said is it's all about unhealthy dependencies. Idolatry. Same deal. Let me read you a couple of other things. Remember, this is all going to be about discernment, ultimately. Let me read you a little story. Discernment. Being able to see things clearly. Clearly. Being able to see clearly. Do you think it's possible? You know what it says in the big book? It says in the big book, when it talks about the nature of our problem, the real nature of our problem, we talked about this week, this is what it says. It says in the chapter, let's see whether we can find it, how it works. This is what it says our real problem is. It says it's about selfishness and self-centeredness. That's a spiritual problem, being selfish and self-centered. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. Don't believe me. The root of your troubles is your selfish and self-centered. If you're an alcoholic, if you're here, if you're an addict, you're selfish and self-centered. That's not my indictment. That's what the book says. This is supposed to be our basic text, what you agree with. If you're trying to figure out what your problem is, why do I feel the way I do? Why do I think the way I am? When am I going to get better? What's my problem? You want to know what your problem is? You know, listen, I'll help you out. You don't even have to look for the chart. You're selfish and you're self-centered. No, but I'm a good guy. I'm a good person. No, you're not. But I love other people. No, you don't. You don't even know what the word means. But I do a couple of nice things for people. So what? The most important person in your life, the only person you always think about is you. You think about you 99.9% of the time, and 1% of the time you think about somebody else, and when you think about them, you're thinking about you too. Selfishness, yeah, you know, it's like that old story from that movie Beaches. You know, enough about me, what about you? What do you think about me, you know? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion. Self-delusion means you are deluded. Deluded means you suffer from delusions. Delusions of grandeur. Delusion you think you're better than or worse than or whatever it is. You just don't see what's going on. You just think you see, and you're sure you see. You're absolutely positive you see. Everybody else who disagrees with you is just stupid. You say things like, it sounds like, this is what it sounds like. You look at the guy with 30 years who's your sponsor, and he says something to you like you're an idiot, and you say, this is what you say. It sounds like this. You don't understand. Delusion. You're deluded. No, he understands. He's got 30 years. You're crazy. You're deluded. You're the one who doesn't understand. The problem is you don't understand that you don't understand. That's the real problem. It's called denial. Okay? Okay. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows. They retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we have variably found that sometime in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later places a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcohol is an extreme example of self-will run riot, whatever that means. Well, that's the real problem, because you don't know what that means. I said it. It sounds good. You say, I'm an extreme example of self-will run riot. But if I ask you, well, what does that mean? You can't tell me. You don't know what it means in your life. You know when you find out what it means in your life? Sometimes, at some point in time, when you run smack into a world and your whole world is blown up and you're in a teachable mode where you're actually listening to some sponsor and you're doing these steps, you'll see for a nanosecond where self-will got you in trouble. That's how you learn about it in the air. You don't learn about it sitting comfortably in your chair. Maybe when somebody else is telling their story, you'll be listening to them, but all of a sudden you'll say, man, that's what I did. You learn about it sideways in here. If somebody confronts you with it, the first thing you say without even thinking about what they're saying is, no, you don't understand. That's not me at all. You know, because you don't want to see it. Because if you wanted to see it, if you could see it, you'd see it. You're like every client that walked into my office. You got a story. You got a story. And, you know, nobody believes your story. The cops don't believe your story. They arrested you. The judge doesn't believe your story. The jury didn't believe your story. They convicted you. There's only one person in the entire universe that believes your story. You. And you're absolutely sure you believe in your story. And it's all a great conspiracy. And maybe one other person, your codependent mother. Who's willing to foot the attorney's fee bill because my son is innocent. Blood on his hands, a bloody knife, fingerprints, you call that evidence, you know. They arise on ourselves, and the alcoholics is an extreme example of self will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we got to get rid of self. Or it kills us. It'll kill you. It'll kill you. God makes that possible. So you better have that relationship. You've got to figure out how to do it. That's what the fourth step is all about. It's about this discernment to see what's really going on. And we're fighting it all along the way, and we don't even know we're fighting it. We don't even know we're fighting it because our brain is doing it, and we... And the only way we can figure out about our brain is by using our brain, and it's all screwed up. And so we think we see things and we see the wrong things. We think we hear things, we hear the wrong things. He sold himself short. This last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day as we place the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Courage to face each day as we place the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are as we place the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting to windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks unimportant themselves or tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am, and over my AA years I have made many real honest sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. How do you get that deal? You guys have stopped drinking. You think that's it? How about that deal? You got that deal going on in your life? What would you get for that deal? How would you like to be where that guy is after 18 years? How would you like that deal? Wouldn't that be pretty cool? not only not drinking, feeling like you don't have to justify yourself to anybody, feeling okay about your life and yourself, whatever your circumstances are. I've learned to be content in all things. What does it say when we read before every meeting, the how it works? If you want what we have and willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. It says that. Doesn't it say something like, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path? Remember, it says that, doesn't it? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You know that? This is what I think it means. I think if you do what they did, you ready? You'll get what they got. You ready? If you do what they did, you'll get what they got. Now listen to me. Listen to me. I want to tell you something. I'm not making this stuff up. I'm just going to tell you. When they wrote that in 1939, there were about 100 or so sober at different, extents. When they said, you do what we did, you'll get what we got, in the book, when they wrote that, those are the same guys that said, based upon what they did, that they had been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of what which they had not even dreamed. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now listen to me. When they said they had been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, which they had not even dreamed, the great fact is this and nothing else, that our God has become, our Creator has become the centerpiece of our life. If you do what we did, you'll get what we got. When they said all that, and they put down the promises in that book in 1939, when they talk about all that stuff they got that you want, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, listen to me. You ready? The big book had not been written. You understand that, don't you? That's all in the big book. So, whatever they did, it had nothing to do with the big book. I'm not saying it had nothing to do with it. They wrote a big book, but you understand, they weren't working off the big book. They were working off the Bible. That's why I'm allowed to talk about that stuff. Now, in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, hey, you know what this is? This is Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. This is conference approved. Now, I don't know if you guys understand that there ain't no such thing as conference disapproved. I just want to let you know that, just in case you're wondering. When people say, well, that isn't conference approved, there is no such thing as conference disapproved. Here's what it says. It says, look at this. It says, Bob noted, this is page 96, in case you think I'm faking. Dr. Bob noting that there were no 12 steps. Now, I'm not saying don't do the 12 steps. I'm just, you know what I'm doing? You say, what is he doing? Listen to me. Listen to this. I'm reading. You do whatever if you want to, listen, I know enough about alcoholics. Well, they'll take what I say and figure out all sorts of things I didn't say. He said, don't do the steps. He said, don't read the big book. He said, I'm reading something. You know what I'm reading? I'm reading stuff that 90% of you will never read. You'll never read this stuff. You'll never read the book. You'll just be hovering around this thing if you don't drink for 15, 20 years saying, why isn't it working for me? So I'm reading you one part. One guy in here, two people in here might say, I think I'll read that book and actually do it. That's the truth. That's the absolute truth. Dr. Bob, noting that there were no 12 steps at the time and that our stories didn't amount to anything to speak of. The stories didn't amount to anything to speak of. They didn't have any stories. They didn't have any sobriety. Nobody was sober for 30 years. They didn't have any big book. They didn't have any steps. They had nothing. Dr. Bob noting that there were no 12 steps at the time and that our stories didn't amount to anything to speak of. So what's the secret? Later said they were convinced, being convinced. We were convinced that the answer to their problems were in the good book. Not the big book, the good book. To some of us older ones, these are the older guys with like 4 years, the parts that we found absolutely essential were the Sermon on the Mount. That's a sermon given by Jesus in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, which when I came in here 30 years ago, they handed me the book, Sermon on the Mount, to read. Somehow today it's like a dirty word because of no other reason other than a fellowship of crazy people have decided that. Because we're cool. You understand? But I can tell you this. There's a lot of people around that don't necessarily believe that. You wouldn't know who they are because they got long-term sobriety. You know, this is like really a giant self-cleaning oven. Every 2 years, the bullshit burns off anyway. To some of us older ones, the parts that we found absolutely essential needs absolutely essential, were the Sermon on the Mount, which is a sermon. Don't have to believe whether you believe in Jesus. It's just a sermon. That was their big book. Chapter 13, chapter of the 1 Corinthians, that's a letter from the Apostle Paul, and the book of James. Our fellowship was almost called the James Club. That's what they read. That's how, when they got there, well, that's what they did. I'm not going to tell you you should do that. I'm going to tell you that's what they did. When they wrote that book and said, really, have we seen a person with 35? That's what they did to get where they were. Now, you can decide in your alcoholic mind that means that you don't have to do that. So that's fine with me. I don't care. You can do whatever you want to do. But I want to read you something. I want to read you something about 1 Corinthians. Do you remember about, because it's short, I'm not going to go to the Sermon on the Mount. Somehow I'm going to wrap this thing up with this sermon thing, but let me, remember the guy in the glass? The guy, what kind of glass are we talking about? We're talking about what? Like a mirror. A mirror, right? The guy in the glass, a mirror. What are we talking about when they talked about it before the first step? They said we're deluded, right? We don't see things. We're self-aware, right, that we usually don't say. It's about delusion. It's about walking through the planet, earning money, procreating, making children, making babies, getting married, getting divorced, hurting people, you know, crashing cars, destroying your life, walking around, drunk, sober, it doesn't matter, in a deluded, delusional state where you don't even see what's really going on. And one day you wake up when you're 30 years old or 40 years old or 50 years old, having destroyed 50 people around you in your entire life, and said, I think I have a drinking problem. And you still don't even see the rest of this stuff. Even though it says in the 12 and 12, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his devastating weakness. It doesn't say accept his alcoholism. It doesn't say accepts the fact that he can't drink. It says accepts his devastating weakness and all its consequences, whatever that is. Has to do with a lot more than just drink. Listen, I sponsor, literally, a lot of guys. Anybody who's been around for 30 sponsors a lot of people. And I can tell you, 99.9% of the people I sponsor don't have a drinking problem. Doesn't matter, none of them have a drinking problem. Because I can't help anybody with a drinking problem. I can't. If you have a drinking problem, I can't help you. You need to drink. I really can't. I've tried to help people drink impaired, but I can't help them. I tell them, don't drink. I tell them, go to meetings. I say, 99. I tell them all that. If they're going to drink, they drink. If they're not going to drink, they don't drink. I really, at my best, you know where I'm at my best helping people? When they stop drinking. I really don't do much for people unless they stop drinking. But after they stop drinking, they're nuts. And then you know where I help them? You know where I help them? I help them with everything else. Well, I help them with the real problem. Because now that they're sober, we talk about the real stuff. The stuff that they don't even, they haven't seen the drinking in 20, 30, 40 years. They haven't seen that. What do you think about the other stuff? They don't see that for another 20, 30 years. Some of us have tried to get rid of our old ideas. The result was nil until we let go absolutely. No, that you think it's like one old idea, five old ideas? How about 10,000? You really do think that you can charge money on a credit card and spend more money than you make and not go into debt? You really think that the reason you're broke and everything has nothing to do with your spending? You really think you could do it, live your life, whatever you want to live like, and you really think that, you know, your behavior means that you really don't see what's going on? You really don't think whatever it is you're doing, and really I'm not trying to be, but the stuff that you're doing, whether it's addicted to pornography or gossiping around about other people behind their back, talking about other people, or getting angry or going to, you really think it has no effect on your life or people or how you feel about yourself? You really believe that? You really think your actions, the way you are right now, has nothing to do with your sobriety? It's all about not drinking? You honestly believe that? You really think whether you believe in God or you don't believe in God or whether you have faith has nothing to do with your emotional sobriety? Really, you really believe that? That's not what the big book says. Is that what you would like it to say? Then that's what it says for you. If I speak with the tongue of men and angels but have not love, if I'm a good speaker but I don't love people, I don't love myself, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. This is the stuff they were reading. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, if I'm smart and if I have faith and I can move mountains, but I have not love, I'm nothing. It means nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, I give up everything. I do all sorts of good things for people, but I have not love. I gain nothing. I gain nothing. Love is, this is what love is. What do you think love is? You think it's getting laid? You think, oh, I love her. Why? I got laid last night. I'm love, we're in love. You know, that's the way it worked for me. You get laid, will you marry me? You know? Well, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. Has nothing to do with love. Has to do with love has to do with giving. It doesn't have to do with getting. It's all about getting for us. What are you going to give me? I want to get. Love, you want to know what love is? It's patience. Well, I guess we all flunked that deal. Flunked. 90% of marriages go down to its why, because it's not patient. We got to go. We got to, what are you taking so long? Love is, did you know love is patient? You didn't know that, did you? Sure, you're an alcoholic. Did you know love is kind? That's the end of our deal. Did you know it does not envy? Did you know that? You know, how can you say you love and you know anything about love if you're mad at me? For whatever reason, because I'm up here speaking, whatever it is. Do you know it does not boast? Do you know it's not proud? It's not conceited? Do you know it's not rude? You know it's not self-seeking? You know it's not easily angered? Did you know that? You guys ever get angry? Did you know love is not easily angered? If you get angry easily, you know, you can tell me all about your sobriety. I just watch what makes you mad, what gets you upset. You know, I say God, Jesus, whatever I say, you get mad at me, tells me everything I need to know about you. You could have 40 years. Tells me all about who you are and what you really are and what's really going on. Because, you know, I don't get mad at you. It's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. You ever do that? You ever start thinking about people and all the wrongs they did? Did you know love never does that? Why don't you guys admit it? You have a passive acquaintance at best and probably not with love at all. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in truth. You know what they do in AA and around the world? They love to see people screw up. They love to jump on people. It was Sarah Palin, whoever it is, just love to see people screw up. They rejoice in it. He screwed up. You know, it always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always perseveres. Why should I be talking about this in AA? This is a toxic proof. Wrong. Because in Dr. Bob, the good old times, the old timers, the guy who wrote this, the guy who said, really, I haven't seen, they said this stuff was essential. This is what they learned on. This is what they cut their teeth on. The only reason you don't hear about it in Alcoholics Anonymous is because you're unbelievably, seriously deprived in your education. And besides that, you're also closed-minded. It's true. You know it's true. You've been to the meetings where they say you don't want to hear about God and everything. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. For where there is knowledge, it will pass away. Listen to me. So we know in part, and we prophesize in part, but when perfection comes, imperfect disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child, but when I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see a poor reflection in a mirror. Now we see a poor reflection in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now we know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am known. We don't see. We don't understand. We don't discern. Just like the man in the glass. Just like self-delusion. That's the way the nature of man is. That's the way the nature of ours is. Only we're probably more serious than most people. We just don't get it. And then it says at the end, the famous stuff, maybe the three, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. It's all about being able to see things. Because we don't want to see, because everything blocks us from seeing. So one day I'm at a meeting when I'm 3 or 4 months sober, and I told you about this, I'll tell it, it's worth telling again, and some guy introduces himself as a recovered alcoholic, and for the first 3 months I was sober, all he was talking about was recovering, I'm a recovering alcoholic, there is no cure, and this guy gets up and says, my name's Joe, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I said, what the hell is that all about? I'd never heard it before. Who does he think? He thinks he's cured? He's lying to these people. He's telling these people that I couldn't stop thinking about how he had said he was recovered. That's a lie. He's poisoning these people's minds. He can't be recovered. You can't recover from this thing. And that whole meeting, 9 days of the meeting, I'm thinking about how bullshit he is, how wrong he is, how somebody has to do something about this or tell somebody. And I walk out of the meeting and I tell my sponsor. He says, how's the meeting? He says that's a pretty good speaker. He has a lot to say. He says, he was full of crap. He was telling everybody he was recovered because that's all I heard. I heard it clear as bell. That's all I could think about. I didn't even listen to what else he said. And my sponsor said, well, you are. I said, no, I'm recovering. He says, you're recovered. And he pointed me to the forward of the first edition. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a hopeless gee. I wonder what else he had to say. Don't you think you do that when you read the big book? Don't you think you do that when you listen to speakers? Don't you think because of resentments and fear and because it doesn't mend within, don't you think you block out this and you block out that and say, this guy's, don't you think there are guys back there in the back row, I'm not talking about necessarily you guys, there are guys around saying, that guy's full of shit, that guy's full of shit. And while they're saying that, they're not listening to the word, none of it is coming in. And then 10 years from now, they're drinking, they can't get it, and they can't understand why because they never allowed the message to get in for whatever reason. Don't you think they were doing the same thing I was doing? Don't you think that is happening all over the place in this deal? In Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's about discernment. And then later on in the book, what does it say here? It says, you think faith, you know, perhaps, here it is, right after the fourth step. It says this, perhaps there is a better way. We think so. We are now on a different basis. We're on a different basis, a different deal. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. You do this fourth step, you're on a different deal. You're on a different basis. The scales fall from your eyes, you see, of trusting and relying. Why? There he is again, because it's all about God. It's not about being smarter or swifter. It's all about we're on a different basis, trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. You know who he's talking about? He's talking about the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are working this program. He doesn't say, I trust. He says, we trust. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. Now, if you don't believe that, then all that means is that's okay. You're allowed to be here. Just means you're not just part of that we. Just means you're not doing it. For what reason? I'll tell you why. Because you don't want to. That's the only reason. Because you don't. It's not because you don't understand the words. You can make this, if you're an alcoholic, you can turn this into anything you want to turn it into. Make believe it says whatever you want to say it. Ignore whatever it says. It says, we trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. Before that, in the first chapter, in the second chapter, it says, we're now on a new basis, we're rocking the fourth dimension. The one thing we know in our lives is that our Creator, we're sure of, lives in our heart. It's all about Him. We are in a world to play the role He assigned. He assigns just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. Can it be any clearer? The only way you could deny what they're saying in here and make believe it isn't saying that is you'd have to change the words in the Greek or something or just blind yourself to them or do what I did when I was mad at the guy and resentful of the guy because he was telling me something I didn't want to hear and block out the rest of his story. What's that about if it isn't about self-delusion? What they say the real problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. Because we trust our own body, because we're so selfish that we think we're so right that we depend upon ourselves that nobody else counts, nobody else's opinion counts, because they don't understand. Because they're not as smart as us. What is that if it's not the opposite of humility? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Wouldn't you like to do that? That'd be a cool thing. You know, when you say, when you worry, anybody ever worry about anything? You know that's fear. You ever anxious about anything? You know it's fear. You ever can't get to sleep at night because you're worried about something? You know that's fear. You know, when you're pissed off about somebody, you know that's fear? How would you like to outgrow that? How would you like to get rid of that? Like at once. At once. It all has to do with relying upon him. It all has to be able to see. How would you like to see that? You know, you see stuff. You understand stuff. Things get clearer. You know, when things get clearer, when the world gets clearer, and people gets clearer, and you get clearer, and your relationship is clearer, you want to know something? You don't trip over the furniture. You don't trip over the furniture of this world. You don't trip over people, you don't trip over places, you don't trip over things, you don't get yourself in jams, you don't find yourself calling up attorneys doing all sorts of, how did I get myself involved? You don't get involved in craziness. Your life isn't a melodrama. You know, you're not a drama queen or a drama king. You don't get involved in that stuff. It doesn't happen. The fourth step, how you do it, there's a chart. There's a chart. You don't really have to. I'm not putting down a Hazelden or going to the internet. There is a chart. I mean, I would say just to hell, why don't you try the big book? Okay, there's a chart. You know, the fourth step is the fourth step, and then ultimately the fifth step, we'll go to somebody else, talk about it, is the first step in ripping down all those barriers and seeing things differently so that you can build a relationship, a better relationship with him, and see things clearer. So you ought to try it. Thank you.